sweat the technique.
Now back to the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Oh, no. No Blank today. Blank is gone. Why is Blank gone? 713-780-3776. If you aren't listening to the start of the program, Blankers texted us today, 7:58, which borderline too early. The fact that he was saying, I'm not going to join you for work, I think is what saved him here. But if you're just texting like, hey, good morning, 7:57 actually. He said, big eyes, I got a sick little one. So he called us big eyes. He said that it was a voice-to-text mistake. Okay, I can hear you on that. And he said sorry, but he spelled it S-O-E-R-Y, which is not how you spell sorry. As
I mean, he did grow up in Wisconsin. It's pretty close to the Canadian
border. But he corrected himself. He said sorry. He spelled it the right way. And then he also responded to a tweet of mine. He responded to a tweet of mine 17 hours after the tweet, in which he gave me this weird gibberish. The gibberish in the response was pull P9 PUB. That's the last we've heard from Joel Blank. That was at 9:49 this morning. So where is Blankers today? Wrong answers only. This gentleman says that Joel was tanked by aliens. They saw him sporting Rockets gear and figured he was a friend. I don't really get it, but it's kind of funny.
Grade the joke?
Yeah, I kind of like the joke. I just don't get it.
How can you like a joke if you don't get it?
Because there's a little bit of a, you know, there's a little bit of a jab to him being a Rockets guy. He mentions the Rockets a lot. We play the I like where he's going. I feel like if I understood fully with where he was going, I think I would really like that joke. So I'm like halfway there, one foot in the door. Blankers is not at work today because he was arrested for opening all of the baseball card packs at his local Target in hopes of pulling every Jose Abreu card so he could write in his current 2024 stats. I don't put that above Blankers, and I also think he probably shops at Target, not Walmart, because he's kind of bougie. He's kind of bougie like that.
Shopping at Target ain't bougie.
I mean, if you're picking up your toilet paper and your, you know,
I mean,
your,
I prefer to shop at H-E-B, but I wouldn't call Target bougie.
Target's borderline bougie. Is Target bougie? 713-780-3776. I think that it is. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Jamal's on the line. We'll get to these Texans trade scenarios in a moment. But Jamal wants to talk about the Texans uniforms. Jamal, you're in the hive of the bees. What's up?
Hey, guys. How's it going? So, I just wanted to call in about the jersey reveal today. So the other jerseys revealed today. And so when I first, I saw him and I was kind of disappointed a little bit, but then I went back and got some more looks and really noticed like they kind of modernized just the old traditional look. And with the H-Town alternates, you know, we had the leaks last week and stuff. And, you know, when I saw the helmet at first, and I was just like, man, this is not it. This is not what I kind of had in mind. And so I was able to get some context on it because what I was hoping for was just, you know, more of a quote unquote, the oily blue, the love your blue or whatnot. I kind of like what U of H had did with that jersey, that uniform last year that kind of started a whole bunch of hoopla, but found out that with the alternate, the H-Town alternate, that it was a lot of pushback from the owners and the Titans organization that the amount of blue, Houston blue, quote unquote, in the uniform was the most that they could use because the Titans organization really pushed back with the NFL on it. And so hearing that context kind of like, okay, kind of gave me an understanding on things because I was really hard. I kind of was hoping, like, I don't know if you guys remember, but when the Houston Rockets had did like a City Series edition, kind of nod to the Oilers where the whole uniform was like that blue. So I was hoping that our alternate uniform was going to be something like that. And so once I got the context, I was like, oh, so they basically did as much as they could do with the H-Town alternate uni. And so, you know, with that information out there, I guess I was like, well, I guess it's not so bad. And so that was just pretty much about it because I was really, in my opinion, I think a lot of, like, I kind of see things through a different lens. And I kind of noticed, like, over the recent years, a lot of the organizations, you want to say, like, the Texas Rangers, how they, I think a lot of organizations have kind of, I don't know if you swagger jack the Oilers, if you will, with the Rangers. They have all like a Oiler blue or the Columbia blue. Mm-hmm. You see it in the UFL and their Arlington Renegade team. Yep. And the Tennessee is adding more blue into their regular unis now. And so I was like, man, we just really need to, you know, own that color back. But I'll just close with this and saying, I guess with that context out there, they did what they could do, and with knowing that, I think I'm okay with the with the H-Town unis, and just wanted to chime in on that.
Appreciate that, Jamal. And you're right. I heard that too. I heard some of that hinted coming up until the coming into today, like that this was something that Amy Adams stunk. Kind of put her hands on, wasn't going to allow the Texans to use that H-Town blue as much. We heard from a lot of people that it was going to be more of like a secondary color. So we had heard the rumors of this. I, like you, wish that there was more H-Town blue. I do understand that the McNairs and the Houston Texans were handcuffed in terms of how much they could use it. That said, they're still ugly. Like, the H-Town tough ones are still ugly. My favorite use of the H-Town blue, though, is the bullhead. I call the bullhead Toro. I know that, you know, that's the mascot, but I call the bullhead Toro. My favorite use of the H-Town blue with the uniforms is the Toro with the outline of the H-Town blue. I hate those jerseys. The favorite thing that I think that comes out of those jerseys is the fact that you can have a Toro with the H-Town blue outline. I'll be looking for some of that merch. I thought that was a very sharp look.
Yeah, I mentioned that when we were talking about the uniforms earlier. I love that variant on the Texans logo with the light blue outline, kind of the different color Toro logo. I would absolutely buy a hat or a shirt with that on it. So I hope that one use being on the shoulder of that one uniform isn't the only use we see from that for the Texans. I hope they put that on some merch, because I would definitely buy some.
Yeah, I love the Toro with the H-Town blue outline. That's a really sharp look. So Jonathan Alexander does great work for the Houston Chronicle. He put out five potential trades. Not that this is rumored at all. Just five, threw out five trades that the Houston Texans could be. Nah, I don't even want to say could be. He just threw things against the wall, seeing if they would stick. We know that Nick Caserio likes to make a lot of trades. Will and Dale. Trade one with Philadelphia. Texans would trade back. They would trade 42 and 59, get 50, 53, and 172. Yay or nay from a Houston Texans point of view?
So you're
trading 42 and 59. You're getting 50, 53, and 172 back.
So you move back eight spots to get a better second pick in the second round. I would probably pass on this. I mean, without looking at the draft trade value chart, it mm-hmm. seems like it would possibly be a win. But you're already in a spot where, especially amongst the positions you need the most, like corner and defensive tackle, where there's probably going to be a deficit and maybe not the players you want there at 42. So moving back eight more spots, unless you're just truly don't care what position you draft and you're fully going BPA, I think I would decline that deal.
I think that I'm probably pulling the trigger on this. Now, a big part of this is what your board looks like when you're on the clock at 42. If you have, like, of course, all these GMs, they break things down into tiers, tier one, tier two, tier three. If you have, like, six or seven, and of course you have eight, if you have a bunch of players that are on the same tier whenever you're on the board at 42, I would be more likely to do this, because now you're trading down, yes, eight spots, but you're likely to get two players from that same tier, and then you could use 172 to trade up in the draft a little bit later. So I actually like this trade. Now, I will say, with the caveat of what your board looks like, if you have two players left on your, you know, a certain tier whenever 42 comes up, I'm not doing it. If you have six or seven, especially if you have eight, I am willing to do it. But this is one that I kind of like. Trade two with Pittsburgh. You're going to trade 42, 86, 127. You get back 51, 84, 98, 195.
Yeah, I think I'm passing for the same reasons. I don't really I guess, like you said, for the last one, it is entirely dependent upon what your board looks like. Like, if there's a run at what you want, if you get to a spot and you know, all the guys are kind of the same on your board, or maybe you just missed out on someone because they got taken in the pick right before you, and everyone else you for the positions you need are pretty much the same after that, then I definitely think I could talk myself into a point of trading down to accrue the extra picks instead of taking someone there at 42. So, but without seeing the board, just going off what I know now, I think I would pass on this one as well.
Yeah, I'm probably out on this one, even with the board, because, like, what are you really gaining here?
Yeah, I don't care about a pick at 120, honestly.
You're trading, you're trading down 9 spots. You're improving 2 spots from 86 to 84. I don't think that you really gain a whole lot with this one, so I'm out on this one. The third trade is with the LA Rams. This one is another trade back. Rams would receive 42 and 86. You're receiving 52, 83, 99, 155.
Yeah, to me that's the same as the one with the Steelers. I don't think the improvement later in the draft is enough for me to give up 42.
Yeah, I'm out on this one too. You're not gaining enough with those second, third, fourth picks. I'm out on that one too. I think it is very similar to Pittsburgh as well. The fourth one with the Commies of Washington. This is the first trade up we've seen. Texans would receive pick 40, 152. They would trade 42 and 123. So to move up 2 spots, you're moving down 123 to 152.
Yeah, I would do that. I mean, again, what is the need? I mean, I guess it depends on what the board looks like, because you're only – what you're giving up doesn't matter to me, but obviously the idea of moving up 2 spots, there has to be someone that maybe fell that just is an absolute complete shocker, that there's no way in the world they would be there 2 picks later.
Yep.
I don't see a lot of scenarios that play out like that. It feels like you would be in that spot, and there might be 3 or 4 players you like at least, and at that point – then I would pass on it. Yep. But if there's someone they feel like they have to have, I don't feel like what they'd be asking to or what they'd be giving up is enough to say no to that. So I would take it.
If I have 3 players same tier on my board, I'm probably not doing it. If there's 1 player who I feel is falling and he's by far my best player available, I'm absolutely doing it. So board here depends on what I have. But, yeah, I wouldn't be opposed to that at all. And then maybe the wackiest trade, which wouldn't be that wacky for Nick Caserio, is with Arizona. So let's do business again. Texans receive pick 27.
Whoa.
And they trade 42, 86, and 127 for it.
Okay, so 87 is your third round pick. What is 127?
Fifth maybe.
Because
I don't think they have a fourth.
Okay, so you keep one. You keep one of your seconds, and you give away your third and I guess a fifth to get to 27. Yeah, I think I would do that. Like you're giving up a second round pick, but that second round pick becomes 27. It becomes the first round pick. So essentially, you're giving up a third, which I care about, and then like a fifth round pick, which I give, to know what's about. So
that's a fourth. It's a fourth, by the way. They don't have
a fourth.
They don't have a fifth rounder. They have 2 fourth rounders.
Okay, that makes it a little tougher because there are. You drafted Owen Daniels in the fourth round. You drafted Damian Pierce in the fourth round. You're just still. There's still a decent chance you can draft starters there in the fourth round. I still think I'd lean towards yes if it's a prospect that you were projecting to go in the teens, and then is suddenly slipping, and you're there at say 25 or 26, and he's still there. In that scenario, I think I would go for it. Third and fourth is tough. But I would probably go for it if someone that you had graded as a prospect in the teens is still there.
It's a third and a fourth, yeah. The only way I'm doing this, it's kind of what you said, a pick in the team. Like, if you had a player in the team
like
that
a Byron
falls to 27, I think he might be a top 10 pick. For me, it's probably top 15, but we're pretty much, on the same page. Like, it would need to be a top 15, top 19 player that falls to 27 to pull the trigger on that. But I wouldn't be opposed to it. I wouldn't hate it. 713-780-ESPN. Let's go back out to the HRMP listener line. Pena wants to talk about men's clothes. Pena, you're in the hive with the bees. What's up?
Hey, what's up, Jeremy? I know you don't like the H-Town the H-Town tough jerseys.
Yeah.
Would you have preferred if the helmet instead of the H, would you have preferred like the red ones with the horns on it, but with the H-Town blue instead of the red and the darker blue, or just the basic, the H-Town blue, the regular H-Town logo? The regular Texans logo, but with the H-Town blue, so the one like the on the sleeve.
Uh-huh.
And Joel, he's helping Kyle serve plays at the party tonight. That's what he said. Thank you. Have a great day.
That's for Blankers. Thank you, Pena. I'm not really sure what you said, but the answer is yes. I think I would have preferred anything over that Old English H. And it's really the colors on it. It's three different colors on it.
Yeah, because you like the Old English H that's red on the back of the helmet.
Yeah, that one I think looks sharp. The Old English H on the back of the navy blue helmet with the Toro on the side I think looks sharp. To me, it's the color scheme with it. That's what I've learned about myself. I don't like that color scheme. It does remind me like The Greatest Showman. No, I think I do understand what Pena's talking about. Pena's talking about the Toro with the H-Town blue outline. That would be awesome on a helmet. I would love that on the helmet. So the answer to that is a hard yes. Now, did Amy Adams stunk interfere with that? I think like Jamal was saying, there's a really good chance that the answer to that is yes, that it is yes. All right, 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Where is Blankers at today? You can tell us about the Texans uniforms. This is probably the only day we're going to talk about men's clothing. Also, what's your most ideal scenario for the Texans with their 2 second-round picks? What outcome could happen in the draft that would cause you to say they crushed it? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Wrong answers only. Where is Blankers? 713-780-3776. 4624. Joe was at the Texans uniform reveal party. That was not Derek Stingley in the uniform. That was Joe Blank. Okay. I mean, I could see the similarities there between Joe Blank and Derek Stingley. I mean,
you
I
do.
Think there's
what,
more
what are those similarities?
I mean, pretty much everything. Body style, athleticism, the age is proportional. You just multiply Stingley's by two. I think there's a lot of similarities between the two. We're not going to read 2370. It says Joel's hanging with Diddy. Come on, we're not going to read that.
That's
on the air.
Not. No, we would never read that. That's irresponsible.
Yeah, we're not reading that kind of stuff on the air. This is proper radio. We're not going to read Joel's hanging with Diddy on the radio. Come on, who do you think we are? 713-780-ESPN. He would never. 713-780-3776. All right, what's your most ideal scenario for the Texans' 2 second-round picks?
I don't know if you're in agreement with me on this. I think you probably are. But to me, the two most glaring holes they have on this roster are left guard and cornerback. So, like, I know you can't strictly draft completely for need. If the guys aren't there when you pick, then you'd be irresponsible to reach way down the draft board to take someone just to fill that position. But my most ideal draft scenario for the Texans in the second round would be the draft board falling to them where they could take a corner and a left guard that you could reasonably say that we could reasonably say on Monday, the Monday following the draft, that they've now found someone that we think can start for them week one at those two positions.
Okay. So those two specifically?
Yes, corner and left guard.
Corner and left guard. That's interesting that you said left guard. Do you think that's a bigger need than one tech defensive tackle?
I do. Yeah. I'm not going to trust Kenyon Green.
I think the better way to ask this question, let's throw the names involved. Like, are you more comfortable starting Kenyon Green at left guard, or are you more comfortable starting either Foley, I can't say his last name, Foley, who you got from Jacksonville, or Tim Settle, who came from Buffalo, at the one tech defensive tackle? Which of those two things is a lesser of the two evils?
I would rather start Settle and Foley, Mrs. Foley's baby boy. Mostly because when you're talking about Kenyon Green, not only do we know he's a complete disaster, or at least there is some hope that Foley and Settle could be adequate, but I think you're also, when you're probably going to have Juice Scruggs starting at center, I like Juice Scruggs, but he's the young guy. He might be someone that, you know, suffers a little bit of, you know, inconsistency, so I don't want two guys there, you know, spot back-to-back in their spots right in the front where they could be giving up pressure right up the middle on C.J. Stroud to be right next to each other. I think I would rather trust absorbing maybe the faults of Settle and Foley when you have guys on the defensive line like you do around them. There's a lot of star talent on the sides of those of that defensive tackle spot. Whereas Juice Scruggs is a second-year player. If Kenyon Green's struggling, you got a second-year player that maybe has some inconsistency right next to each other, right where C.J. Stroud could be facing pressure right up the middle. I think I'd rather deal with the defensive tackle.
I actually agree with you, but the reason I pressed you on it is because I don't think that most people would agree with us. I think most people would look at that one tech defensive tackle as a bigger need than left guard. And you, the reason that I think that they do isn't because of faith in Kenyon Green and or Jared Patterson and or Kendrick Green. I think it's more about the investment that it took for Kenyon Green. I think because you use, what was it, pick 15? You traded from 12 to 15, right?
Yeah.
Because you use pick 15 for Kenyon Green, people feel like they need to play Kenyon Green. Because you passed up on Kyle Hamilton, because Kyle Hamilton was available at that pick, so was Jordan Davis, you feel like you have to play Kenyon Green. But you know what the irony here is? Like, we're in Houston. What's the topic du jour in this city when it comes to the Astros? It's about Jose Abreu and how bad he is. And what is this current issue that Jim Crane's dealing with? It's the sunk cost fallacy. We talk about this all the time, where Jim Crane's not willing to cut bait or limit playing time with Jose Abreu because he gave him this huge $19.5 million a year deal for 3 years, and he doesn't want to – I don't even know if it's like admit fault. I think it's more he doesn't want to see this high-pricey investment that he has to cut ties on without seeing it through. That's the same thing with Kenyon Green, except instead of money, it's draft pick compensation. So, like, if you don't, if you're like, well, Jim Crane's terrible, he should be cutting Jose Abreu or at least bench him, you should be saying the same thing about Kenyon Green. I guess the differences there are Kenyon Green's been hurt the last 2 years. He's still very young, but I still think sunk cost fallacies in play here. With Jose Abreu, it's money. With Kenyon Green, it's draft pick capital.
There certainly is a merit to what you said, but I think some of the things you listed there at the end with his age and the injuries allow the Texans and Nick Caserio and D'Amico Ryans kind of talk themselves into, well, you know, what if, well, maybe there's room for development, and that might lead them, because I do think Nick Caserio is, especially for as much as he believes in short-term contracts, looking at very short windows of time or increments, sorry. I do think he would be a guy that would be willing to move on, because if he doesn't believe a guy can help him here and now, then what's the point of hanging on to him? But I think that with Kenyon Green, obviously not a good pass blocker as a rookie, but was fairly decent, or at least above average as a run blocker, so half of it's there. The second year is completely washed with injury. I do think they could talk themselves into making excuses for Kenyon Green and still believing his upside, whereas in the direct comparison to Jose Abreu, look at everything outside of a month and a half stretch from the middle of August through the playoffs, and there's nothing to point to for Jose Abreu that would give you any reason for optimism or hope that he would be able to turn it around.
Yeah. Yeah. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. The answer to me, I'm not hell-bent on specific positions. Like, I've made that very clear. I'm almost always best player available. You can almost always talk me into the best player available when it comes to a team selecting in the NFL draft. And because I don't think the Houston Texans have like these massive holes, sure they're weak in some spots. Every NFL team salary cap era is going to be weak at certain areas. You can't be great everywhere. And the cornerback too is, you know, a bit one of those weaknesses. I think safety too, next to Jalen Petrie, is one of those weaknesses. I think left guard one is one of those weaknesses. I don't know if one tech defensive tackle is as big a weakness as we think. But people would say that. The third linebacker spot, people would throw out there. Texans play a lot of nickel. How important is that third linebacker? I'm cool with the second running back, as I've made known. I want Nick Caserio to draft best player available with those two picks. Like, and what we say is good versus what we say bad is usually going to be determined, like, on how sexy the pick is. Is it, if we've heard of the two guys that are taken to the second rounder, everybody's going to be like, oh, it's an A grade. He knocked it out of the park. When in reality, we don't really know. Give me 4 years and I'll tell you then. If it's two guys that we've never heard of in our life, oh, Nick Caserio's a bum. He's a clown. He's a terrible general manager. He didn't help this team at all in the draft. and then they turn out to be like Pro Bowlers, oh, he must actually be a pretty good general manager. So I'm not crazy about like draft grades. I'm a big proponent of best player available. I think Nick Caserio has, in a really, really good way, has put this team in a position to where they can draft the best player available. And I tip my cap. I know that we make fun of Nick Caserio. He doesn't believe in windows, doesn't know what a diva is. I think he has positioned the Texans very nicely heading into their portion of the draft, more than likely on Friday.
I mostly agree with you, but I would suggest, and it's kind of where I fall on this, that I mostly agree with your point of view and the idea of taking best player available, but I would like to kind of maybe focus it to best player among available, basically for every position except for like quarterback and left tackle, like and probably wide receiver too. But
if you have one of those stud receivers that drops, and maybe it's not 42, but maybe it's your second round pick.
Define stud.
Ladd McConkey.
See,
if he falls to your second rounder.
I don't see him as – I mean, I know he tested well at the combine and everyone's wowed with his athleticism, but I don't know. I mean, you look at the stat page from Georgia. He was, what, like 400 yards a year? I don't see that as the type of prospect that would get me to break from a bigger position of need.
College stats don't mean much to me. I don't think it's a great representation of what they're going to be as a pro. But it could be anybody of that tier. If it's a wide receiver that they love that falls to them with their second round pick, I would have no issue with them taking a receiver. Diggs is on a 1-year deal. Nico Collins is under contract next year.
Yeah, I get what you're saying, and maybe wide receiver, there is more room for or more wiggle room there with wide receiver as you laid out. But I kind of draw comparisons to our offseason conversations where the Astros were like, hey, you know, you really need a left-handed bat. You really need some more middle relief options. And these problems now, obviously,
that's a pet peeve of mine. Because you're talking about free agency that needs to help you in the now. I think that's like a fundamental problem that we have as football fans, especially football fans for a specific team, where we look at the draft as they need to help in a certain way in year one. When it's a 4-year commitment, you're looking at the prospect that can help you the best in 4 years, not one. And I think the fan perspective looks too much at the one versus the four.
I mean, you're not wrong, but I mean, I think grading rookies, like I'm against draft grades year one. I'm not advocating for that.
Right.
But I do think you see a lot of rookies that come in and help you. I mean, obviously we're talking about or certainly with players at the top of the draft like Will Anderson and CJ Stroud, is completely different than when we're talking about players in the second round. But you do see second round picks come in and help right away. I mean, hell, Damian Pierce, a fourth round pick as a running back, helped year one, and that maybe that is a conversation of position. Some guys like running back, I would argue, pass rushers, positions like that could come in and be an impact more so than maybe an offensive lineman or a cornerback who seemed to develop a little bit slower. Tight end also seems to develop a little bit slower. Mm-hmm. But I just don't want to pass on positions where there's such a glaring need, not only for this year but for the next couple years, over positions that might be viewed as more luxury picks.
Mike from League City, hey guys, you're talking about the Texans draft. What do y'all think about us having 9 picks? Is there a possibility of us moving up in the first round? And if that is a possibility, what will we grab? It's always a possibility, Nick Caserio. Nick Caserio is uber aggressive. So, yes, he's a Will and Dylan son of a gun. There's a likeliness that he will at least trade in the draft up to the first round. I tend to say no because they traded out of the first round, but I wouldn't put it past him. Couple of texts here. If you shop at Target, you are considered bougie, Brian.
I don't do all my shopping at Target.
Tony 22. He says Target is definitely bougie. Man. Shows where you're at on the pay scale.
No. You don't know the inner workings of radio if you think I'm on the upper end of pay scale.
Yeah. Hoity-toity, BMAC, you can't sit there and say that Target isn't bougie and then you shop at HEB. You don't have to lie to us. Mr. Whole Foods. Mr. Whole Foods is hilarious. They have empanadas that I've never heard of.
I've bought one thing from Whole Foods my entire life.
Every now and then my wife will go to Whole Foods and buy some stuff every now and then, once every few months, in the area.
I will say what I bought. The one thing I've ever bought from Whole Foods is going to help the bougie angle that people have put on me. Cause I think it was right after my wife and I had gone to Brazilian Steakhouse for the first time. It was Fogo de Chão, not a sponsor, but shout out. And I just absolutely, love that. I forget the name of it, but that bread they bring out before the meal.
Yeah, it's like the, hollow in the middle almost?
Yeah, like kind of cheesy. Anyway, we found like a recipe, but we needed, I think it was tapioca flour for it. And the only place, so we were going to make them at home because they were just freaking obsessed with it. They ate them like they're crack. But the only place we could get that specific flour to make it was at Whole Foods. So we made a special trip there to get it.
Kind of cheesy, kind of like the jokes of somebody I know. 713-780-ESPN, HRNP, listener line. Time for Cash It or Trash It. What do you want to cash? What do you want to trash? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Prepare for overreaction on my mark.
It's that time of the week where overreactions are welcome.
They say Muhammad Ali was the greatest of all time, but he never fought Cassius Clay. What was he afraid of? Boom! Hot take!
It's Cash 'em.
That is so good. But that's exactly right.
Or Trash 'em.
This is your hot take.
Seems like an overreaction.
With a Killer Bees.
Give us a hot spoonful of your opinion.
He's Brian in for Blankers. 713-780-ESPN. Cash 'em or Trash 'em. What are you cashing? What are you trashing? Brian, why don't you lead us off?
Sure. I think we're actually going to see. I don't know if this is the record. I'm going to assume it is, but I don't feel like doing the research on it. But I think we're going to see six quarterbacks go in the first round of the draft on Thursday night. Six quarterbacks. Obviously, we all know Caleb Williams, Drake May, Jaden Daniels, and J.J. McCarthy all projected to go first round. But look, there's some teams, especially the back half of the first round, because I think the next names like Bo Nix and Michael Penix Jr. are guys that would be drafted top 10 or even in the teens. But there's some teams picking in the 20s who I think probably would be looking to take a shot to maybe get their next quarterback. That maybe those guys are second round picks, the Bo Nix and Michael Penix Jr., but depending on where you're picking in round two, maybe you go ahead and make the leap and pick them in round one. And I'm talking about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and then also the Minnesota Vikings with pick 23. So pick 23 with Minnesota and Tampa Bay picking at 26. I think they're taking Bo Nix and Michael Penix with those two picks, and we're going to see six quarterbacks go in the first round.
That's a good one. Have you looked at the odds on this by chance?
I have not, no.
Yeah, I wonder what kind of odds you could get on six quarterbacks going in the first round. I wonder what Vegas says.
I mean, I feel like four are locks. So
are top 10 guys.
Are
top 10 guys. So, like, does Penix and Nix, do they slide into the, you know,
I mean,
late 20s, maybe even early 30s?
For what it's worth, I'm looking at I've looked at some prospect ratings, and prospect rankings don't, you know, necessarily matter for an actual real draft scenario.
Sure.
But both the one I'm looking at now has Michael Penix at 30 and Bo Nix at 38. So, I mean, if you're a team like Tampa Bay, sure, a team like Minnesota, or hey, maybe that guy isn't there with my second round pick, but I really want a quarterback. I didn't have maybe the ammunition, although Minnesota could, to get up into the top 10 to take one of the other guys, then I think picking 23 and 26 could be a good spot to go with Bo Nix or Michael Penix Jr.
I'm going to trash it.
Trash.
I'm not very strong on this stance. I'm like 55-45. I think it's a really good one. I think it's close to a coin flip. But I'm going to trash it. Now, I do think six quarterbacks go in like the top 40, 45.
So how many would you have in the first round then?
I don't see Nix as a first rounder. I don't see Penix as a first rounder. But do I see a team reaching on a fringe quarterback? Like, yeah, I do. But I don't think that ultimately they will go in the first round. I think those two guys slide. I think there's going to be four QBs in the top 10, and then we see a long run of no quarterbacks, and then you see the teams make the play on Nix and Penix like early day two. That's just my hunch.
I'm interested to get your opinion on Michael Penix Jr. because I
love him.
That's where I was going, because I don't – like, you're right. Like, the consensus seems to be, oh, he's not a first-round guy, and maybe this is – biased opinion through burnt orange colored glasses who had to watch Michael Penix Jr. rip apart my Longhorns.
Yeah, it was probably the best game he played, yeah.
But I mean, you could say the same thing about what were we saying about CJ Stroud this time last year? Like, you know, maybe not all the tape you're super in love with, but man, that Georgia tape.
That's a bit of a reach there, though. Like, comparing Penix to Stroud, like, Stroud was a clear top three, top five pick.
Sure.
And Stroud has more NFL stuff. Like, his arm was better, his accuracy was better. Although, like, Penix's accuracy.
I mean,
Stroud's mobility is better. He's not old. He doesn't have a list of injuries.
The old and injuries is fair, but I mean the stats.
I don't think he has a big
Michael
arm.
Penix was putting up stats.
But again, I don't care about college stats. College stats, you can throw them away.
No, I'm just talking about production and things that would get people talking. And
sure,
I
don't think
to
he's got a big arm. Like I think his arm's kind of noodly. To be frank,
they threw a lot of deep shots when I watched them play.
What's your Penix comp?
Oh, that's a good question.
See, for me, it's Tua. For me,
yeah,
it's Tua
without
the athleticism. Like, I think Tua's more athletic.
Yeah, I think Tua is a good comparison. Who went, number 6 or 7 overall
to the
Dolphins?
Yes, but he was decorated, didn't have injuries, and was young. And he was a far better prospect. Far better prospect.
I suppose. I mean, you can make the argument, and maybe this isn't an argument in my favor as far as saying Michael Penix should be a first-round pick, but you can make an argument that Tua, without the elite weapons he has, wouldn't look like a quarterback worth taking in the first round. But I think there's a team, especially with the Vikings. I mean, hell, you got Justin Jefferson and Jordan Addison. I think you could have that conversation like, hey, what happened with Tua? You give him Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle. He looks like a pretty damn good quarterback. You could have the same conversation with Michael Penix getting Jordan Addison and Justin Jefferson.
Yeah. Yes. What was I going to say? I think Penix can also be like the Russell Wilson type. Again, not nearly the athleticism, but a quarterback that you get late that has a good NFL career. But I think teams are spooked on him for the lack of arm strength, injuries, age. I do think he's going to be solid in the NFL, though. And you know with comps that we always sensationalize. Like, the comp for every single player is extremely sensationalized and is a high bar that they're never going to reach. Cash or trash, the Astros still win the division.
You don't want to expand upon it? Just laying it out there, just like that?
The division. Cash or trash?
You know what? I'm gonna cash it. Yeah, I really don't believe in the rest of the division. The Rangers offense obviously is great, but I'm not convinced their starting pitching is going to hold up over the full season. I have questions about the Mariners offense and the rest of the division. I'm not really all of that worried about with the Angels and the A's. I think the Astros are going to start to find their level. Justin Verlander's back. Assuming Fromber and Javier get back within, let's say, next 10 days. Is that reasonable for both of them? It feels fairly reasonable.
Can Javier come back in 10 days? It's going to be close, right?
Well, he was retroactive to August 18th, so we're already, 5 days past that?
So we're looking at April 33rd. On when he, just kidding.
April 33rd.
A lot of people were saying that Tua's hip. Tua had his hip injury. I'm not saying that. Maybe I did say that Tua didn't have injuries. I don't think that I did. But I'm just talking about Penix having the injuries that's going to spook teams. Tua had the injury that didn't spook teams. I think Penix is going to spook teams, plus the age. Other caches are trashes, but maybe I did say that. We'll check the tapes. 9656, cashing. The show is better without Joel on it. Nah, trash. The show is not better without Blankers. Trashing that, throwing it in the trash as quickly as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. It's trash. I mean, I just wish Joel would show up for work instead of going to pubs at 7 in the morning. But other than that, I have no problems with him.
If he was, you know, Ben. 409 Josh, cash or trash the Texans using, quote, Yankee blue and, quote, Ohio State red for the new Houston uniforms, according to Hannah McNair. I thought it was Cal that said that, but maybe it was Hannah
McNair. The Ohio State red was also thrown into this conversation?
He said the blue is Yankee blue, or maybe it was she. I don't remember. I don't know. One of the McNairs said that it was either that it's Yankee blue and Ohio State red. Should have said Houston red, because Ohio State wears scarlet. Houston wears scarlet.
I mean, it's in the branding battle red day. How could you say it was Ohio State red?
This is an incredibly bad take. This was going to be on Thursday's Bad Take Boulevard. You cannot say that you use the Yankee blue.
No.
You can't say that, McNair.
One, I don't even think it's accurate. Like, if you put them side by side, I wouldn't say they're the same shade of blue. So I would be...
I mean... The owners are saying it's the same.
Maybe Cal is saying they had some copyright infringement, then just copied and pasted the color palette over. But yeah, I mean, besides the fact that I don't think they're the exact same shade of blue. Yeah, read the room. We hate the Yankees. Like, you can't say that it's Yankee blue.
All right, here are a couple of textures. We'll breeze through these. It's becoming painfully obvious to me that the Astros' biggest problem is that their pitchers are just soft. They're soft. Always hurt and ineffective. Cash or trash?
Trash.
I trash that. I know you've got thoughts and opinions on Lance McCullers Jr., but it would be hard to say that anyone else is soft. Like, I mean, maybe Fromber, if your theory is right, and I do believe it is, that he banged his elbow, maybe that's possibly, depending on how he did it, boneheaded. But that doesn't mean he's soft.
No, I think, pitching injuries is an epidemic in baseball. I don't think that they're... universally soft.
Check with the Braves with Spencer Strider. Now, I mean, it's happened across the league.
I do think Lance McCullers is soft. Lance McCullers has to have everything right for him to pitch pitch comfortably. The wind can't be blowing his hair. His fingernails have to be perfectly manicured. The dirt on the mound has to be perfectly raked. Lance is a little soft. The Astros is a staff. No, they're not soft. A cash or trash. Joe Espada is the Astro Steven Silas.
Oh, I'm going to trash that. I know the results have been maybe Steven Silas-esque as far as the win-loss record, but no, there's no way I could put Joe Espada or Steven Silas on Joe Espada. It's not the players running the team or just the complete lack of organization. The things that we were seeing under the Rockets.
I mean, I'm going to trash this too, but it's mostly hope. I don't know that Joe Espada is not the Steven Silas.
Well,
we don't know yet.
I guess if you want to say that he's Steven Silas and the fact that he's going to end up with a bad record, maybe there's a conversation to have there. But to me, there's way more context put into being Steven Silas with just the disorganization, the players getting in trouble and getting suspended and kicked off the team, not running plays for Jabari Smith. There's a way more that goes into being Steven Silas that I can't put on Joe Espada.
I just don't think we have enough information to know. Cash or Trash, another one of Branham's tweets will go viral this week. I didn't realize I had one go viral.
Well, yeah, what went viral?
I don't know. I hope I have something on TikTok go viral. I'm trying to get my TikTok numbers. At Jeremy J. Branham, by the way.
Maybe talking about Joel's reply to you will go viral.
Someone texted us the Twitter response that Blankers. What does pool P9 pub mean? Does anybody know what pool P9 pub means? He responded to me on one of my tweets saying pool P9 pub. What in the world does that mean?
We're going to have Joel explain himself when he gets back tomorrow.
Hopefully he's back tomorrow. Yeah, I'm beginning to wonder if he will be.
Unless he's at another pub and he's still tying one on with Glenn Davis.
All right, let's play the Texans draft game. We're going to take a big board. In today's instance, it's Mel Kiper's big board. And we'll look at his 42, 43rd, 44, 45th best players on his big board. And then we take who we want to take. 713-780-ESPN. Where is Blankers at today? Wrong answers only. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Wrong answers only. Where is Blankers today? 713-780-3776.
Maybe he's pre-gaming the jersey party.
Didn't they already have that?
I thought it was tonight, no?
They didn't do the jersey party when they unveiled the jerseys? They're going to wait?
I don't think so. I thought it was tonight.
8 hours to have the jersey party?
Yeah, let me go to their Twitter account. I thought it was tonight, but I could certainly be wrong. I had a lot of things going on this morning.
You could be right. It just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. You're unveiling the jerseys at 10. Why are you having the party at 7? Maybe to sell merch. Okay, it's all starting to make sense. Clear alert, Sugar Land, Texas. 2023 Chevrolet Lightning. Apparently, Granato abducted and handed off Blankers to the Italian mafia so we wouldn't have to split advertising money from bull shirts.
Who's with me? It's me, Joel Blank.
That's a great one. That's text of the day. Is it bad that I had to Google what Clear Alert was? I had no idea.
Yeah, Clear Alert
it is bad.
Yeah,
of me? Am I a noob?
No, I don't think that makes you noob. I don't think that one's as well known because Clear Alert implies you're able to take care of yourself.
Now, is it bad of me that I thought Clear Alert was going to be for the elderly?
That's the Gray Alert. They're very on the nose with that one.
That's a great name.
Yeah.
The Gray Alert? That's perfect. that accurately sums up what we're looking for. I like that. But that was a great text there. Where is Blankers today? Wrong answers only. Blankers is playing at the Corner Pocket Pool Hall. How good do we think Blankers would be at pool?
You know what? I don't know. Maybe this is stereotyping, but someone that grows up in Wisconsin drinking beer, I could see him being really good at pool. That feels like a Wisconsin way of life.
Blankers does everything pretty well. Someone said it's a silver alert, not a gray alert, Brian.
Oh, my bad. Whatever.
Way to lay
my
on
bad.
Bad
silver,
silver,
gray, whatever.
It's still the same. I mean, silver, gray. Silver just sounds better than gray.
Silver,
but
fox.
Gray makes more sense, I think. But yeah, I think Blankers would be pretty good at pool. How are you at pool?
Not great. I would say I'm just slightly below average. I can make the shots that are in front of me, and I strike the ball decently, but I can't make anything complicated.
That was a way more elaborate answer than I expected.
What do you want me? Two words?
Yeah, I'm incredibly average at everything I do. So, pool, average.
Except for hot takes, right?
Yeah, depends on who you ask. People think I'm average at that, too. All right, let's look at the Mel Kiper big board. We'll take a look at pick 42, because it's not a pick, but who he's got ranked 42. Texans have pick 42. So with our exercise, making mock drafts great again, you have the option of four guys here. All right, Brian, almost called you Blankers. Malachi Corley, the wide receiver from Western Kentucky, who I like. Now, Stephon Diggs trade kind of certainly changes things around a little bit. That makes me sound like a hypocrite. 43, Roman Wilson, wide receiver from Michigan, 44, Kamari Lassiter, the corner from Georgia, and then 45, I've never heard of this guy, Rook Orahora, the defensive tackle from Clemson.
With those,
I kind of like pick 46, Cooper Beebe, guard from Kansas State.
Yeah.
All right, but we only get those four.
We only get those four.
Changing the rules.
We usually start off with, would you be happy who's 42,
would you be
right?
Happy if Malik, yeah, we do. Yeah, would you be happy with Malachi Corley if he's the pick at 42?
I wouldn't be thrilled because there's someone on this group of four that I would want more. But would I be fine with it to the point where I'm not sending out angry tweets? Yes, I would be fine with it to not send out angry tweets. There's plenty
to like.
That
kind of surprised me.
Yeah, no, it's not. Look, I've been on record. I'd rather have corner. I'd rather have left guard. I'd rather have defensive tackle, assuming one is there that makes sense. But you've pointed out some things that are definitely reasonable with Stephon Diggs only being on a one-year deal, with maybe with the uncertainty of what Nico Collins' future is since he's got on his last year of the contract. So, amongst these four, since we're not looking at who's available after it,
yeah.
if that's the pick, I would be fine with it.
Yeah, I would be fine with Malachi Corley as well. You know, really reading up on him. I've seen a few highlights from Corley, but it's more on different people who I trust that have said good things about him. Daniel Jeremiah, Lance, reading his reports. I would be fine if Corley was the pick at 42. So, yes, I would be okay, like a six. Of these four, who would you take?
I would, like I've pointed out in previous segments, I'm fine with best player available, narrowed down to positions of need. And the Texans have enough where it doesn't feel like you're super reaching because it's only one position of need. So I would go with the of the four, you've got two wide receivers, a corner, and defensive tackle. I would take the corner, Kamari Lassiter from Georgia.
I'm torn between Wilson and Lassiter. I like Wilson more than I like Corley, the receiver. Certainly on BPA, but I'm also like tiers, like certain players tier one. You have a group of players tier two, group of players tier three. And Wilson and Lassiter are on that same tier for me. So I'm going to go Lassiter over Roman Wilson.
Look
so
at
we're,
that.
We're some
agreement.
Pot to go there. Yeah, we're some pot to go. All right, 713-780-ESPN. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Vera, you're in the high with the bees. What's going on, man?
Hey, guys. I appreciate you letting me call in. I think defensive backs, corner, or a safety, or a defensive tackle. I think any of those three positions, we have the best player available. To me, it's, If you pick a guy and you think he's going to be with your team for the next 4 to 8 years, just even if you're picking a little earlier, it's almost like trying to time the market. Don't try to time the market. Don't try to be too cute. If you think he's like 47, 48, the best player, and you're picking 42, just go pick him at 42. I mean, my personal favorite would be to get Michael Hall Jr. At 42. It's a little rich, but look, he's not going to be around when you go pick at 59. And other than that, if you have your defensive backs available, like you said, Kamari Lassiter, or even if somebody like Kool-Aid McKinstry falls to 42, just go pick those guys. I think corner or safety, considering the health of, Jimmy Ward and inconsistent play from Jalen Petrie, either one of those positions would be good. You could get somebody like a Cameron Kitchens at 59 or at 86. Javon Bullard, who didn't have a great Senior Bowl, you could find one of those guys, I think, at 86. So corner or defensive tackle is probably my first pick. I think after the first five or six corners, the drop-off is quite steep. So, yeah, just go get your best player there. I'll hang up and listen. Thanks, guys.
I want Vera to be my general manager. I don't disagree with really much that Vera says. Vera sounds more by positional need than my philosophy.
He narrowed it down to two positions.
Yeah,
he's
more positional need than I am. But again, like, it's going to be hard for me to be angry with anything the Texans do. If they take Spencer Rattler at 42, okay, then we have some issues. But there's almost nothing that's going to make me mad. Like,
right,
you draft a kicker in the third round, okay, we're going to have some issues. But if you take a long snapper in round seven and you try to replace the legend John Weeks, then we have some issues. But there's very little, because of how Caserio has built this roster, that's going to upset me on draft day, or the three draft days.
Yeah, and you mentioned, like, long snapper and quarterback. You could throw in kicker and punter, too. We're talking about things that are reasonable. Certainly we would be mad if they took a punter or a kicker or a quarterback at pick 42, but those aren't reasonable things to even really play out the scenarios for. They're just not going to happen. I can't think of, many things that would truly, truly anger me. Maybe a linebacker at 42, because I do fall into the camp of Texans are going to play and maybe two-thirds of the time in your nickel package. You already have your top two linebackers.
Was that out of necessity, though?
Because
the Texans played a decent amount of 4-3 first half of last season. And then, because I think linebacker three wasn't great, Henry To'o, they moved to a nickel whenever they brought in a King for the second run of things. Like, if Edgerrin Cooper's the pick at 42, okay. Like, okay, maybe D'Amico wants to play more 4-3.
Yeah,
maybe he didn't love playing nickel. Maybe he only did that out of necessity.
That could be an example, as you point that out, and I think you're right. I think that could be an example of, and this is a credit to D'Amico. This is not a criticism at all. Quite the opposite. But that could be D'Amico just tailoring the style of play to the talent they have on the roster. But you're right. Maybe he is someone that would rather have that third linebacker on the field more than they did last season. I don't think that really fits with the modern NFL. I mean, yeah. I don't think opposing offenses are going to run out formations that would allow you to have three linebackers on the field very much. Maybe D'Amico would want it, but I don't think he's really going to have that luxury. So, I mean, unless you're really telling me that this is a Brian Cushing, D'Amico Ryans type linebacker, like a Pro Bowl caliber, although Pro Bowl doesn't mean a whole lot now, but that type of a difference maker at the position. If you're telling me this guy is a difference maker, maybe I could be talked into it, but the draft party we're having, or the draft show that we're having on Friday, if the pick of 42 is a linebacker, I'm probably going to go in the air and say some not nice things.
Yeah, Joe, Dell, Paul, and others.
Like others?
Others. Yeah. Ryan, amongst others.
Sean and I are others receiving votes.
Seemed like a good segue into the read. ESPN 97.5 will be your home for NFL draft coverage in 2024. The only place in town to ever hear every single first-round selection is right here on ESPN 97.5. ESPN radio coverage of the NFL draft starts at 6 on Thursday following the Killer Bees. That's not in the read. I'm ad-libbing here, mentioning our show, Cheap Plug. On Friday, when the Texans are on the clock, we'll have our own draft show, ! Join Paul, Dell, and Joe, and others. For our Texans draft show from 6 to 9 p.m. Friday night. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line. Jeremy Booth, I admire the courage of Jeremy Booth. Jeremy Booth versus Houston Astro fans was the rivalry everybody wanted at the start of the season. Of course, I had some fun with that. Jeremy Booth, who Joe George called a clown, went on with the Killer G's and Joe George and Paul Gallant today. They had a lot of things to talk about. We're going to play some of that, what we liked, what we didn't like. We'll discuss next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.